This is The Takeaway. I'm John Hockenberry, and you are Gregory Carr, is that right?
Yes, sir.
How old are you, Gregory?
I am 13 years old.
And you're an African-American teenager in the St. Louis area. Where do you go to school?
I go to River Road Lutheran School. I'm in eighth grade.
Have you been following the events in Ferguson this week, Gregory?
Yes, sir, I have.
Can I ask you maybe a little sensitive question?
Yes, sir, you can.
Gregory, how many times have you thought about being shot and killed?
In my lifetime, about five.
Five times?
Yes.
Do you think something could happen to you in an encounter with the police?
Yes, it's very likely.
Thank you, Gregory. Hold on there for just a moment. And to all of you out there, very likely to have an unfortunate encounter with police. And having thought five times about being shot, those are the data points from a 13-year-old African-American boy that begin this hour-long special on The Takeaway, Beyond Ferguson. How far is the road to never again? And is there a way to get everyone in America on that road? The truth is, statistically speaking, we don't exactly know if Gregory Carr Jr. should be afraid of being shot. Based on FBI reports, there are 96 cases of white officers killing a black citizen each year over the past 6 years, and that's based on the reporting of just a few hundred of the 17,000 law enforcement agencies in the United States. Well, think about this. A few weeks back, two white people were in a hospital in Atlanta being treated for Ebola. The entire nation was alarmed. What if it was 96 people? In our coverage of the events of Ferguson this hour, one question haunts us. Is there an urgency gap about these police shootings between the races? If so, why? Does it block our way to make change and achieving social justice in this country? We are grateful to the resources of St. Louis Public Radio for assisting us with this special coverage. Reporter Jason Rosenbaum is with us all this hour. He's been covering this story since the protests began. Jason, welcome.
Thank you for having me.
So, Jason, over the past week, have you seen this community around St. Louis coming together and trying to bridge this urgency gap, or are you only seeing divisions?
I'm seeing a lot of divisions. The people that I've been talking to who are at protests or at press conferences, which are open to the public, many of them are from Ferguson, but many of them are from the surrounding area and across the country. And what they're telling me is there is this distrust between them and the judicial system, between them and law enforcement, and between them and other classes that are different from them. I think we're kind of in the early stages of this protest. I think it could be going on for a while until there's some finality with the officer being indicted or not being indicted. But it's clear at this point in time that people are frustrated, and it's going to take a while before I think a deep conversation can be had about what can be done to bridge the divide.
Jason Rosenbaum will be with us all hour long. And now also there in the studios of St. Louis Public Radio, 13-year-old Greg Carr Jr. joins us once again, this time along with his father, Greg Sr. Thanks for being a part of this.
Thank you for inviting us.
Good to be here.
So, Greg Sr., what went through your mind as I was asking those questions of your son just a few moments ago?
A great deal of sadness, but at the same time, a reality. It is what we now know as the talk that African-American parents must have at some point in time with their African-American sons, that there is a possibility that they may be racially profiled, unjustly pulled over, or maybe even killed. So it's that uncomfortable conversation we have to have with our sons to prepare them for the reality.
And this is a conversation, this the talk conversation, is something you've had with other parents?
Yes. It's something that we all have discussed, particularly those of us with African-American male sons. And I was at a parent-teacher's meeting last night at my son's school. And after the meeting was over, it was a very short meeting, but we actually met outside of the school and had some serious discussions for about 30 minutes about the Ferguson situation and the need to have the community informed and to have our young people informed about their rights and how they should act in these certain situations and how to keep calm in these situations.
So this week you've been talking to other African-American parents saying, have you had the talk yet? Have you had the talk yet? Have you had the talk yet? That's been going
yes.
on?
Yes. Yeah? Yes, sir.
Have you had the talk with Greg Jr., Gregory Jr.?
We have. My wife and I have been having these conversations over the years, but we've been doing it incrementally because we wanted to make sure that he understood at his particular age. And Gregory just turned 13, so we felt that we needed to really give him a lot more information. And it's very ironic that the night before Michael Brown was shot, I was watching the documentary Eyes on the Prize, and I was watching the Emmett Till story. And I was struck, and I told Gregory, I said, Gregory, come and look at Emmett Till. I want you to see this. And I showed him a picture of Emmett Till before his demise, the picture his mother put in the coffin, and then they flashed a picture of him, his beaten face and this kind of reconstructed body. And I told him, I said, Emmett Till was only 1 year older than you, son. I said, we need to have these conversations. He said, Dad, why? He said, this really upsets me. And he began to talk to his mother about it. And I said, we need to start having these sorts of courageous conversations.
So what do you think of this courageous conversation business, Gregory?
Well, I think that these conversations are really going to help me through life, teach me to not be scared, how to fight through it and be brave.
Do you think we should get beyond Ferguson, that your generation should someday be able to say to your dad, you know, I think maybe I'm not going to have the same conversation with my son, Dad?
No, you always have to have this type of conversation with your next generation or the generation after that.
Always? That's so sad, though, Gregory.
It is, but it is the truth.
All right, so, Dad, do you think we can never escape this history? I mean, your dad had the same conversation with you, but it had to be a little different. The wording had to be different for your dad talking to you.
It was different, John. And the reason why I say it was different is my dad was a product of the South. He was from a little town called Henderson, Kentucky, right across the Ohio River from Evansville, Indiana. And if my dad were alive today, he would be, in fact, ironically, my dad would have turned 101 on the day that Michael Brown was killed, ironically. And he was a teenager during the 1920s, if that's possible. And during his time, if he was walking on a sidewalk, if a white man walked on the sidewalk, he immediately had to get off the sidewalk, lower his eyes, and not make eye contact. And if he were stopped by the police, he had to say yes, sir, and no, sir, to every question and never raise his voice. And that's the way he raised myself and my four brothers, to exactly use that. And I, for a long time, thought it was a very cowardly way to interact until I was stopped on a two-lane highway in East Central Illinois when I was in graduate school at the University of Illinois. And I literally believe my father's advice saved my life, because the officer harassed me, profiled me, and asked me to hold a flashlight, a lit flashlight, to the side of my face for 35 minutes. And he kept asking me, he said, why are you so polite? I said, because that's what my father taught me. Whenever I'm stopped by the police, I say, yes, sir, no, sir. So I said, sir, I'm giving you respect because you are the police, sir. So therefore, I will respect everything you say, sir. And it helped keep me calm. And I realized that was my father's wisdom coming from the past that literally, I believe, saved my life, because he was very hostile to me that night.
But what about the Constitution, which says you can question authority? What about the Constitution, which says it's okay to ask the authorities, whatever badge they're wearing, what's the problem,
John,
or why are you doing this?
I think that's a great question. The Constitution of the United States does give us that power, but historically the Constitution had to be amended for African Americans. If you go back in the annals of time, that we had to have the 13th, 14th, and 15th Amendment. So we're still dealing with only 150 years since the Emancipation Proclamation. So there's still a great deal of disenfranchisement that goes along with it. There are still individuals who still don't recognize African Americans as citizens of this country. So we have to educate ourselves.
Mr. Carr, before we go, do you think we can get beyond Ferguson in this country?
John, I think we can get beyond it, but I think it's going to take what I think I've coined this phrase now, a courageous conversation, not only with the citizens of Ferguson, but with the United States as a whole. We need to have a very serious dialogue about race. We cannot ignore it, but those things are uncomfortable.
Gregory Carr Sr. is an instructor at Harris Stowe State University in St. Louis, and his son Gregory Carr Jr. is 13 years old. Thanks to both of you for joining us.
Thank you so much for inviting us.
Thank you.
Let's be clear here. An event in Ferguson has reopened a reality in America about race, justice, and fear. And this hour, we're not indicting cops or generalizing victims or excusing criminal behavior. We are exploring in conversation how whites and blacks may be responding differently to the events in Ferguson, even as we don't know the full facts there. Well, what do you say about this?
I'm a middle-aged white man in Seattle, and I think that black people should be given their rights, and they should not be shot down without recourse. Where is the justice? There's no justice. If people are being shot and nothing is done about it, then that's no justice. And without justice, how can we have a true, fair democracy?
Anna Castillo, San Antonio, Texas. I think a lot of us still see it as black and white because of the racial composition of the area. They have a history of police brutality in the area against black men. But it's an American problem because I think minorities, no matter what part of the country you're in, don't have any faith or trust in the police departments because they have minimal minority representation on the force.
Here's a thought from Chesterfield, Missouri. I have taught my children to be colorblind and treat everyone the same. My kids are dumbfounded by the comments they hear at school. We now live in a very white, very racist community. I've had to explain why so many people think they have a right to treat people differently, and it's not easy. Here's a thought from New York City. We don't discuss race at our house and think it's wonderful that our kids, 3 and almost 7, don't classify people based on their skin color. But my older son asked me, while listening to NPR News in the car, what a black man is, which led us into our first conversation about race.
Hi, my name is Jacob, and I'm from St. Charles. I'd like to say Ferguson is still seen as a racial issue rather than a national issue because racism has history here and it's easy to point a finger at. What is equally troubling is the little discretion given to the hiring of law enforcement. Their job is as important as those who create the laws. It's necessary to have the right people performing this duty.
This is Paul from Crystal, Minnesota. The main thing is if we didn't steal and if we would respect officers and not attack them and listen to what they say to us, I think that would be the biggest thing right there. And maybe, you know, we just need to get back some moral standings of, you know, law and order, maybe some rules. And I think that things would be a lot better.
Have the events in Ferguson prompted an important conversation around your dinner table? Call us at 877-8-MY-TAKE. And this conversation continues later today on Twitter. I'll be taking your questions and listening to your comments at 6 p.m. Eastern Time, 3 p.m. Pacific. Follow at The Takeaway, and you can use the hashtag #BeyondFerguson, all one word, to join me and others as we discuss race, justice, and America, all on Twitter today at 6 p.m. Eastern.
There's a lot going on right now. Mounting economic inequality, threats to democracy, environmental disaster, the sour stench of chaos in the air. I'm Brooke Gladstone, host of WNYC's On the Media. Want to understand the reasons and the meanings of the narratives that led us here, and maybe how to head them off at the pass? That's On the Media's specialty. Take a listen wherever you get your podcasts.